to the Dark Side of Soul podcast. This is Joe.
This is Sean.
And this week, this time, we have a guest. We have Sid Lee. Been wanting to have him on the whole time. For those of you not watching the video, he is well equipped with cigarette, booze, and cat.
Here we go.
What are you drinking, Sid?
Bell's whiskey.
Whiskey.
Nice.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
What do you got there, Joe? What are you drinking?
Whatever's cheap.
Cold leftover coffee.
Oh. And I got Guinness.
Oh.
So yeah, Sid, I'd say you're one of the best guests to have for our topic today, which is UFOs. We're gonna keep it Korea specific. But before we do that, when you want to tell everyone about yourself a little bit, just briefly?
Well, I was born in the States to a Korean dad and a Brazilian mom, both of who were English profs. Both of them taught at Korean universities here. And so I grew up in Korea, but attended American schools. So, I don't know, it's kind of weird. I kind of grew up with English as my first language, even though I grew up in Korea. Yeah, the States is kind of a foreign country to me, and yet Korean is my second-ish language.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you're fluent in Korean as well.
Yeah, fluent enough, but yeah, definitely more comfortable with English.
It's a central point of our pop culture that we're being visited within fiction and also within documentary style representations or presentations on these things. But it's funny then how the news just is very, like you said, they're very condescending, they're very derisive, they just ignore it. And when they do report on it, that's how they act. But these things are at the forefront of how of very popular things, all these shows and all these different mediums. So I find there's this interesting disconnect. Going forward then, what are some of the more interesting UFO cases in Korea?
So I used to think that there was nothing noteworthy in Korea. And it was actually a...
Boy, were you wrong.
Yeah, boy, was I wrong. You asking me to do this podcast prompted me to do a little bit more digging, and then I realized that there was more than I thought. I mean, I had heard that... I mean, I had known of UFO incidents going back to the Korean War. But to me, that's not a surprise because... UFO incidents are quite common. Well, since World War II, you know, the Foo Fighters. Wartime UFO incidents are quite common. The Vietnam War, World War II, Korean War. So I expected that there would be some Korean War incidents, but I wasn't too familiar with them. I just kind of listened to those stories kind of in passing. But in re-digging, you know, doing my homework for this podcast, there was that one link you sent me that was covered by the History Channel for their Project Blue Book or TV show.
Yep.
And so my favorite UFO researcher is this guy named Richard Dolan. And what he likes to do is every time the History Channel does an episode, he'll go back and give the real life details of it, because the History Channel will embellish and fictionalize, and you know, they'll conflate a lot of stuff. You know, 1951. So this is during the Korean War. Gangwon province, as you know, is split into two.
Yeah.
So part of Gangwon Province is here in South Korea, and part of it is in North Korea. Mm. And there's not a city, but what would you call it? Gun,
a county.
County. Okay, so
Cheonan County. Gun is district.
Gun is this district.
Yeah. Oh, Gun. Gun or Gun. Yeah. Gun. Oh, Goon. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. County.
Yeah. Gun is county. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gun is like the. They're both. Yeah, county.
Yeah.
Okay, so Cheonan Gun.
Mm.
So Gangwon-do is split into two. There's a Gangwon in North Korea, and there's a Gangwon in South Korea. And in both the northern half and the southern half, there's a Cheonan. There's a Cheonan in both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is Cheonan in North Korea, 1951. And now this story was told actually in the 19... When was it told?
When it was made public?
No, 1989. Yeah, it was made public.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no, that's the note that I jotted down. Okay, so this was made public in 1989 to CUFOS, the Center for UFO Studies, which is an organization started by J. Allen Hynek. I'll get back to who he is later if you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, people can look him up if it, yeah.
Yeah, well, Spielberg consulted him for making
Close Encounters?
Yeah, Close Encounters, yeah.
Right.
J. Allen, okay, no, I'll get into it now, fuck it. J. Allen Hynek was... Allen Hynek was originally appointed to Project Blue Book, which was the Air Force's attempt during the 50s. It was their so-called formal investigation into the UFO phenomenon. And their conclusion was, okay, folks, there's nothing to it. Go back to bed. you know, except there was like several Project Blue Book research or studies, whatever. There's Project Blue Book 14. You know, there's one, two, three, four. And Project Blue Book 14. And that's the one where all the meat is at. And what that one establishes is the exact opposite of what they told the public.
Hmm.
That one establishes that all the cases with the best evidence are the most unsolvable.
Hmm.
Let me repeat that. The ones with the best evidence, like they have radar, they have reliable witnesses, as in not some drunk redneck somewhere in a swamp, you know, swamp gas. It's in fact, the guy who coined the phrase swamp gas was J. Allen Hynek.
Mm-hmm.
He was the ultimate skeptic. He coined the phrase. His task was to like come up with any and all possible, like, how can you possibly dismiss this phenomenon? But while doing his, you know, appointed task, he himself started to go, hey, wait a minute. This can't be a flock of birds. Wait, now, this was captured on radar. Now, wait, what? It was traveling at what speeds? It did what now? It turned at what right degree angle? What? You know?
Yeah.
So he's starting to do his own investigations. And the guy who was hired to do all the Air Force's official debunking eventually became a believer.
Okay.
And that's, yeah, that's J. Allen Hynek. And he was eventually one of the guys that Spielberg consulted to make that movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So anyway, this guy's organization, CUFOS, Center for UFO Studies, May of 1989, Private First Class Francis P. Wall reported to him. So this guy was a private first class during the Korean War.
Okay.
And so his story, like, this guy's an old man by this time, right? But he reported that in the spring of 1951, he was Army Infantry, what was his position? Army Infantry, 25th Division, 27th Regiment, 2nd Battalion, Easy Company, Company E. And he was in what was known as the Iron Triangle. So I guess that was like in Gangwon-do Cheonggun area.
Yeah, that's it's a good name considering that area is that's where the Baekdudaegan is, the spine of the Korean Peninsula, all the mountains.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Mountain knowledge.
Knowledge.
Anyway.
Yeah. So what was the incident?
Yeah. I don't know if they still do this now in the post 9/11 era, but back then at least they used to pre-announce bombardment, aerial bombardment. So like, they give the civilians a heads up or something. So they would pre-announce their bombardment before like aerial bombardment or artillery fire. So they were doing that. And so I guess these guys were on from their elevated position, I guess they were looking down and to their right side, they saw this guy, Wall, Francis P. Wall, what he described as a jack-o'-lantern, came wafting down across the mountain, right into the area of their artillery target. And it remained there for between 45 minutes to an hour. Yeah. And so right away, the second I heard up to this part of the story, the first thing I thought of was the 1942 Battle of Los Angeles.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a famous photo of that too. I don't know. Have you heard of it?
Oh yeah. Well, they have all the spotlight that fired into the air and all the spotlights are, sure. Quite famous. For anyone listening who's not sure, just Google Battle of Los Angeles and you'll get the story.
And not a shell hit it.
Right.
But a bunch of shrapnel fell back down and there's old people who like it struck them. Like there's an old lady I saw on some UFO TV shows. Like, it hit me in the wrist right here. And this thing visually, their description was that it was pulsating orange to blue green, orange to blue green lights. And the guy who's giving this testimony here, this Francis P. Wall, he got permission from his commanding officer, who he said was a Lieutenant Evans, gave him permission to fire his M1 rifle. And here's an interesting description, which I've never heard before. This is, to me, it's unique. He fired at this craft and heard a metallic ding. Like he shoots at it and ding. Yeah. Which is unique. It's weird. It was weird to him too, because he saw all that artillery fire at the thing and miss it or not hit it or go through it. You know, it's just an anomalous, it's a big what the F, you know? And which is what reminded, which is why it reminded me of the Battle of Los Angeles. These rounds, this thing, right?
Yeah.
But then here's this guy with his little rifle and a bullet. It sounds, ding. It seems to hit it. So it struck him too. Like he commented on this, like, you know, my rifle seemed to hit it. What a weird thing. And so he speculates as to why that might be. And I won't get into that because that's his speculation and that type of thing doesn't interest me. So, but anyway, I quoted some of his own, some passages from his own testimony as to what happened subsequently. He says, so the way the UFO reacted, and then we were attacked, I guess you would call it. In any event, we were swept by some form of a ray that was emitted in pulses, in waves that you could visually see only when it was aimed directly at you. That is to say, like a searchlight sweeps around and the segments of light, you would see it coming at you. if that makes any sense to you. You would feel a burning, tingling sensation all over your body as though something were penetrating you. And then he goes on to describe how he and his guys were commanded to like go into their bunkers, et cetera, et cetera. And then, I didn't bother to write that down. It hovered over us for a while, lit up the whole area with its bright light that I am telling you about. And then I saw it shoot off at a 45 degree angle. It's that quick. Just, it was there and was gone. And, you know, this is just common. It's just so common. It's routine. Mm-hmm. Just the blink, you know. You get used to certain patterns when you get into this phenomenon. Mm-hmm. That it becomes easier to detect the BS.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah.
That was during the war, right?
Yeah. So this is 1951.
Okay.
And so this guy who gave this testimony, Francis P. Wall, he says since that time, he still has periods of disorientation and memory loss. Weight went down from 180 pounds down to 130 pounds, and he has trouble keeping up his body weight. And disabled.
The question, Joe just said he liked that. are there any, the idea where the idea that witnessing a UFO, just witnessing it, would cause someone to lose weight, to be disoriented and have continuous memory loss for the rest of their lives. Is there any comment by researchers on why something like that happens? Would the extraterrestrials have had some sort of intent to do that to those people? Is there any research on that kind of thing that you know of?
Well, it wasn't, just to nitpick a small point, but it wasn't just the witnessing of the craft. It was that beam that they were emitting.
I see.
So the guy describes it like a searchlight.
Right.
It was like flashing, and you would see it coming at you.
Like on Close Encounters. Sunburns everywhere.
Yeah, right in. That's right. That's one of the key scenes, the lights. Yeah.
So,
gosh, I love that movie.
So common sense would tell us to interpret this light that was flashed at them as some version of a weapon.
Yeah.
But first, since you brought up abduction, are there any cases of that in Korea?
I didn't think there would be. See, this is actually one of the things that had me skeptical about the whole UFO thing.
Okay.
I mean, we've got metamaterials. We've got scientists like Hal Puthoff giving interviews saying, okay, so we've had this chunk of weird metal in possession for years, you know, and it's just coming out, you know, within the past 2 or 3 years through the New York Times and all that. It's some odd combination of bismuth and what was it? Magnesium and whatnot. And they're talking about, they're speculating as to its purpose. They think it's like a waveguide for some kind of for a spacecraft, essentially. They're talking about, you know, this weird artifact that they have. And before that, you know, like I said earlier, we've got like the sixth man on the moon saying UFOs are a damn reality. Like, governments need to come clean. We've got France and Belgium in 1999. They come up with their Cometa report, basically talking about those two countries' dealings with UFOs invading, you know, violating their national airspace. And it was basically a challenge to the U.S., like saying, look, if these things aren't alien, then it's got to be the U.S. What's up? Tell us what you know. Yeah, and journalist Leslie Kane, she's like, this is an interesting story. Let's have it, let me translate it and have it published in the New York Times. The New York Times is like, no. Yeah. So despite all this stuff that makes me go, damn, this phenomenon is real, there is this nagging, persistent reality. The fact that Korea is my home and I live in Korea. Mm-hmm. And there's something about life in Korea that makes UFOs extra, extra further away.
Mm. In what way? What do you mean?
Well, maybe if you live in Arizona.
Okay.
Maybe if you live in Las Vegas, close to Area 51. Mm. Maybe on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night at 2 a.m., if you look at the night sky, you might see a black triangle and go, whoa, is that ours or theirs?
Right. But in Korea, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. In Korea, everybody's staring at the ground, whether they have a cell phone in their hand or not.
Right.
Cell phone or not.
We rarely look at the sky at night because there's nothing to see.
Yeah, it's just black.
The sky is polluted. People are either like they're busy like staring at their little gato, or even if they don't have a phone, their head is downcast because they're depressed, maybe.
So generally, anyway, your idea is that, but if abductions occur here and have occurred in the past, your point is that people wouldn't discuss it. They wouldn't be as open to talk about it, say, compared to, I don't know, in the United States, where this seems to be
my initial prejudice was if these abductions are so universal, then how come I haven't heard of any of them right where I live?
Mm, in Korea, yeah.
Yeah, because I've heard of these cases in Brazil, Mexico, the U.S., Canada, England, Russia, Japan, but not Korea. And I also happen to know what kind of overall nose to the grindstone, real salt of the earth, just what a gaze downcast kind of attitude Koreans generally tend to have. But this goes back to an earlier point that I was making about my initial point about keeping an open mind. Mm-hmm. When I first got into this topic, like remaining kind of inconclusive.
Right.
Because I've, subsequently come to learn that, again, that was just my prejudice. It turns out that there are quite a few cases in Korea, too. Now, both of you guys, you both live in Korea, you know how hesitant and reluctant Koreans are to come forward about mental health problems, how reluctant they are to seek treatment for mental health problems.
Yeah.
So people would be your point
anything
is like
that,
if they said
anything that makes you stand out, we'll not talk about. So anything supernatural or anything like that, or mental issues, anything that makes you stand out.
They're afraid to look crazy.
Yeah, that's unusual. Yeah,
they really don't want to stand out. I mean, it's to the point where, this is a joke that I tell often, but a lot of my American friends, they'll love a band until that band becomes widely popular.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm that
once everybody, once everybody else loves that band, they're like, "Oh, I thought the thing was like my like unique thing, you know, my private little." You know.
Yeah.
But in Korea, it's the opposite. You can play a band for someone like, "Hey, what do you think of this band?" They're like, "Yeah, the music's okay, but are they popular?" Like Koreans won't listen to a group unless everyone else already acknowledges them.
Yeah,
they want.
It's like middle school.
Yeah. It's we live in one giant middle school.
Yeah.
Oh my God! That's the side note. That's a perfect analogy. North Korea is a prison. South Korea is a middle school.
There you go. There's your next slam poetry.
Slam poetry night in Itaewon. Yeah. Good. All right, Sid. Yeah, that's it's always an interesting topic.
We're gonna,
I know there's so much more we could talk about, but that sets us up for another episode. Just something quick for everyone listening. If anyone's interested, this seems to be a case, and Sid knows about it, that not a lot of people tend to know is that there is a video of a fleet of UFOs taken in Gwanghwamun in daylight. Do you remember what year that was, Sid?
Not a fleet. There are a number of videos.
Several.
Yeah. It depends on how you do your search, because anytime I've gone back to do the search, it's been... But... And I could be wrong, but I think the years are like 2008, 2011, like 2012. I think like there's a few years, but there have been a number, at least two or three daytime fleets spotted in Gwanghwamun.
Downtown Seoul, right by the palace.
Seoul, that's right. Central Seoul.
Right by Gyobo Building, you will recognize Gyobo. Right by the Isunshin, you know...
The statue,
yeah.
Yeah, the daytime fleets, they look like just white balloons. And the first thing that anyone ever says to try to debunk it is, Chinese lanterns.
Ah, Chinese lanterns.
And so there's a number of ways of trying to, I mean, come on, you think it's just a bunch of idiot ufologists who are too eager to believe? No, of course, everyone wants to establish what these could be. So was it a holiday? What's the altitude of these things? Could they be these things? But then you look, all of these things are eliminated. And you look at the way they behave. Willfully, these things, like some of them, they like merge. They're willfully like interacting with each other.
Yeah.
Willfully, like merging.
Yeah. Like coordinated drones in a way. Yeah. Like the Pyeongchang Olympics, the opening ceremony.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't watch that.
That's pretty cool. You gotta see it.
And there's a nighttime incident of a small fleet, just a very small fleet, like a handful of lights traveling in a fleet. And this is over, I think it was Suwon. And I don't remember Suwon. The year.
Okay.
But I think
south of Suwon.
And it was reported on NBC. And that's on YouTube. I'll find the link and send that to you guys too.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Thank you.
But yeah, I'm sorry we didn't have time to get into the abduction thing.
We'll get that.
We'll do another video.
Just to remind everyone, we do have run the tours, Dark Side of Seoul, Ghost Walk, darksideofseoul.com. You can book it on there. Thank you, Ed, at Sodak-san for the music. The music you're hearing. Also, thank you for our top tier patrons, Angel Earl, Jamie Staley, Joel Bonamini and Sharon Cullen, thank you so much for supporting the show. If you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon. We have it linked to our page at darksideofseoul.com/podcast. Sid, thank you for joining us today, buddy.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Sure thing.
If you want to transform this entire podcast about UFOs,
there we go.
I think we know what Sid's going to be doing. UFO podcast by Sid Lee.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Good night.